Now let's take our Bibles and look in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis, and we're in chapter 27. The last time we saw the eldest brother Esau sell his birthright to his brother Jacob. And today we will see Esau cheated out of the family blessing. The 25th chapter ends after he sold his birthright with it saying that in verse 34, 25-34, that he, that would be Esau, did eat and drink, and he rose up and went his way. It's no small thing that it says of Esau that he went his way. It means he was indifferent to what had happened. It means that he was carefree, thinking all was okay. It means that he did not go God's way. It means he did not go the family way. He did not proceed thinking of spiritual truth and values. And he went not the way of truth as revealed by God. But it says he went his way. That is, he went his own way. But then it gets worse after that because it tells us at the very end that Esau despised his birthright. He had no interest in it in his heart. He was indifferent to it. And worse than indifference, he despised it. So the inheritance that was come to him, which would give him responsibility for the family and responsibility over the covenant that God had given to Abraham, he totally rejected it, turned from it, he despised it. So what we see about him is some good things about Esau, but we also see his weakness, his offense, and the reason for his guilt. So when we read in the Bible, both in the book of Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament, and then in Paul's discourse on God's sovereignty in Romans 9, 10, and 11, and he tells us that God loved Jacob and that he hated Esau, at once we can see God's grace and we can see God's judgment. So he set his love upon one and he withheld his love from another. But make no mistake, Jacob did not deserve the grace of God, and Esau did reserve the judgment of God. So both of those are invariably true. The shocking matter isn't that God hated Esau, refused to save him, turned from him, but it is that he loved Jacob. That's the staggering truth of all of this, is that he would love any sinner, would set his heart upon any sinner. Now, the corruption of character is very evident in the family that we're going to see in this 27th chapter. So Isaac and Rebekah and their two sons, Jacob and Esau, are going to reveal much of what we would call today a dysfunctional family. There's an awful lot of conflict that is here. But what we're to understand is the absolute need of an absolute sovereign Savior. The everlasting love of God must be determined and it must be definite. The redemption and the righteousness of Christ, won and earned at the cross, must be truly saving. And the regeneration of life in every generation to those God loved and for whom Christ died must be awakening and it must be enlightening. And so what we see of this corruption in this family is also true of mine. And so I would ask you, is it also true of yours? In all of our families, what we know is much heartache, much breaking of vows, and much hurt from within, some worse than others, but obviously it is all around us. Now I want you to look with me in this 27th chapter, and I'm going to give it a theme. And the theme of this chapter, I would say, is lies, fraud, and deception. Lies, fraud, and deception. So there's a lot of interest as we go into this 27th chapter. Much is at stake when you come to this point. If you will look with me, please, in this particular passage, if you'll find your place, what we're going to find is that the birthright is taken from Esau because of his own weakness. He needed to be blessed by Isaac, but instead he's left with nothing. And what we find in the 25th chapter, maybe I should point that out to you before we go further, in the 23rd verse, that God had made a prophecy before the two boys were born, to Rebekah that two nations are in thee. So I'm in 25:23. Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now that prophecy is carried down to this day, because you have Israel, and then you have the eastern nations that are there that are still in conflict. And then it tells of the birth, and when the birth occurs, there is a wrestling from within, no doubt to be the first from the womb. Esau comes out first. Jacob is holding to his ankle, trying to pull his brother back in. And so this conflict that is going on is from that day until this. Before I go into this 27th chapter, let me say something about each of the characters that is here. And what is true of one is true of the other. First of all, Isaac did not believe that prophecy that was given to God. And I know he didn't because of the way he behaved. Had he believed, he would have known that the blessing was to go to Jacob, and he would have followed that. The word believe is a word that means by live. And so he did not live by what God had told him, so I know that he didn't believe it. He should never have tried to bypass Jacob and attempt to give the blessing to Esau. He should have taught Esau to bow to God's sovereignty. But what had occurred over 40 years before is he followed his appetites, and what we see in this 27th chapter is he is still following his appetites. He went in direct contradiction to what God had said. Isaac did not believe God. The second thing I would say is that Rebekah did not believe God. Where's her patience? Where's her prayer life? Where's her maturity in directing her son? Where is her submission to Isaac? She shows herself to be small. She shows herself to be out of line. She shows herself to be unbelieving. What about Jacob? Jacob is the one who is loved, but Jacob didn't believe God. He was old enough to know better when he cheated his brother, took advantage of his brother. He was old enough to have reconsidered what he did when he got his brother to do what he did and cheated him out of the birthright. He apparently, on the other hand, learned nothing. He let his human will and his human works try to accomplish the very will of God. So only free and unfettered grace could save a man like Jacob, because when we see him in this chapter, he is unbelieving. And then what about Esau? Surely there's somebody here that believes. But Esau obviously did not believe God. Surely God's word should have meant something to him, because he had heard the story without question of what God had said concerning the two brothers. But he didn't care about that. He was trying to get the blessing away from his father and away from his brother. He wanted what he wanted, and that's all there was to it. And so this older brother, Esau, is clearly in a state of rebellion. If you'll look with me, we see Esau's rebellion in chapter 26, where it says Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beriah, the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elion, the Hittite. And then look at verse 35. These things were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. So this story that we have seen is a story that tells of great grief. The word grief means pretty much what you would think it does. It's a word that refers to a great stress within, upon the heart and upon the mind. And then he not only married someone from outside of the family, he had heard the story of Abraham sending a servant from the 24th chapter to find a wife for him from the family so that he wouldn't marry a Canaanite girl. But instead, he went that way, and then he also committed polygamy. By committing polygamy, he entered into the way of the Canaanites. It goes all the way back to the 4th chapter in verse 19, where as a son of Cain, it says that Lamech took two wives, and the destruction of the family polygamy has always been a corrupt practice and a deterioration of God's order. So it was a grief to them, a state of bitterness, a matter of the heart to them. In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 10, it says, "The heart knows his own bitterness." So bitterness is always in the heart, and that's where it is. This grief of mind and bitterness of heart go together. So let's see what happens in the 27th chapter. "And it came to pass that when Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau his eldest son. And he said unto Esau, my son, and he said unto him, behold, here am I. And he said, behold, now I'm old, I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons and your quiver with your bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison, and make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die." And Rebekah, no doubt standing off to the side somewhere, unseen by both, Rebekah heard when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. And Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau, thy brother, say, bring me venison, make me savory meat that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord, before the Lord and before my death." Isaac, I think, was a great man. He was patient. He was a powerful man. He was a peace-loving man, but he had a weakness. And Rebekah was a lovely person, a lovely lady outside and inside in many ways, and she respected family values. She also respected what God had said, but she also has a weakness. Esau was the outdoors boy, and Jacob was the inside boy. Isaac favored Esau, and Rebekah favored Jacob. The elder, remember we are told, that's Esau, would serve the younger, and that is Jacob. So Isaac had made a promise that he could not keep when he said, right here, "Bring it to me, and I will bless you." He said that he could go against what God had said, but he really couldn't. He was not going to be able to break God's law. You may think you can go against God's law and you can do what you want, but I assure you, you cannot without paying a heavy, heavy price. And the heavy price that is going to be paid by this family that is coming is going to be quite severe. So he said to Esau, "Go find me some deer meat, some venison, bring it back, grill it up just right, make it just like you know how to do it, and I'll eat, and after I've eaten, I'll be satisfied, and I will give you my blessing." But Rebekah overheard what was being said, as we read a moment ago, and she conceived a treacherous and tricky maneuver to outwit both her brother, or rather her son, and her husband. Instead of her bowing her heart, as did Hannah that we read a few moments ago in 1 Samuel chapter 2, where she said, "For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by Him are actions weighed." She was seeking something from God, but instead of trying to make it happen, she sought the way of the Lord. Rebekah, on the other hand, took matters into her own hands. Now, it's for sure that God's sovereignty will overrule, but make no mistake, Rebekah is accountable for her actions. So God will have His way, but you and I are accountable for our actions. Conflict was in Abraham's family between Hagar and Ishmael. Now conflict is in Isaac's family between Jacob and Esau, and also between the mom and the dad. Here's what Rebekah plotted. Look in verse 8. "Now therefore, my son," she's talking to Jacob. This is Rebekah to Jacob. "Obey my voice according to all which I command thee." She should command him to obey God, shouldn't she? But command, "I want you to obey what I tell you. I want you to go to the flock, and I want you to take from me two kids, that is, two young goats, and I want you to make them savory, and I will make them savory meat for your father, such as he loves. And bring it to your father that he may eat, that he may bless it before his death. And so Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. My father, peradventure, will feel me, and shall see, I will seem to him a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing." The word deceiver down here is a word that has basically three meanings. It's a word that means a trick. It's also a word that means despise. And it's also a word that means darkness. In the book of Job, it's referred to as the darkness of night. Jacob is afraid that his father will look down upon him. He's afraid that he'll be found out, figured out, and he'll look down upon him. Instead of a blessing, he'll have a curse. Now, he's not really so much unwilling to lie. It's not the lie that's bothering him. It's being found out about the lie. But that's the way liars are. He's just afraid that he's going to be found out. Jacob couldn't see any way that his dad could be fooled. But as usual, as husbands and wives go, the wives always understand the husbands better than anybody else and understand them, for the most part, better than they understand themselves. And so Rebekah understood Isaac. So Isaac was smooth, Esau was hairy, but she knew what to do. So we take up in verse 13. "And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch them." In other words, if you are figured out, let's let the curse be on me instead of upon you. Now she's promising something she can't, isn't she? And he went and he fetched and he brought the two young goats to his mother. And his mother made savory, that is tasty meat, that is a dish, such as his father loved. She knew what he loved, been married a long time. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she took the skins of the kids of the goats and put them upon his hands, so his body would be covered from his wrist up all the way up to his neck would be covered with clothing, but his hands would not be covered. So she put them upon his hands and put them upon his neck, put this hair upon his neck. And so when Isaac would feel his hands or feel his neck, he would feel, and that's, he would think that is Esau. And so in verse 16, she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and the smooth of his neck. And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared and put them in the hands of her son. So Rebekah thought of all of it, every bit of it. All of it was hers. She fixed the meal. She knew that Isaac would like. You girls know how to do that. You know how to make something that your husband likes. She gave Jacob the clothes that should have been Esau's. She made him smell and feel like his brother. And she covered him with this sheep's wool, and that sheep's wool then would tell us sort of like the way Esau would have been. He came out of his mother's womb all hairy. He stayed that way, and he felt like a goat all of his life. He doesn't seem to be too appealing of a man. I was able to find two wives, but I don't imagine they would like touching him, feeling like a goat. But that's the way he felt. Felt like a goat all over. Then, look with me please, and then in verse number 18, "And he," that is Jacob, "came unto his father, and he said, My father. And Isaac said, Here am I. And then he said, Who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I'm Esau, thy firstborn. I've done according as you badest me to do." That is what you told me to do. "Arise, and I pray thee, sit and eat of my," look at this, "my venison, that thy soul may bless thee." Think of that now. "I pray thee, sit and eat my venison." Esau, he's saying, wasn't his venison at all, wasn't venison at all, wasn't wild meat. It was a tame goat, "that thy soul may bless me." And Isaac said unto his son, "How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son?" And Jacob said, posing as Esau, "Because the Lord thy God brought it unto me." Now he could conceal how he smelled, he could conceal how he felt, but he couldn't conceal his voice. But one thing he could do, and that is he could lie with the best of them. And so he set forth a lie and he said, "I'm Esau, thy firstborn." But if you'll notice all of this, he didn't stop there, did he? He could have just stopped and said that much, but he didn't. What did he say? He said, "How is it that you've done this so quickly?" And he said, "The Lord, thy God, brought it unto me." He used the two highest, most used names in the Old Testament concerning God. He said, "Because the Lord," that is Yahweh, or we pronounce it Jehovah, "thy God, Elohim," which is the first name used of God. Elohim is the name that means He is the Almighty One, the Creator, the only name that appears in the first chapter of Genesis concerning Him, the Elohim, always has the article in front of it, the Elohim. And then He said also that "I'm Jehovah, I'm Yahweh." That's the name that God used when He would speak to Moses a little bit later on in the book of Exodus, and He is saying, "I am the self-existent one." So those two names, He didn't hesitate to use the name of God to His own best end. Notice that He did not say, "My God." He said, "Because thy God," not "my God," but "thy God." Now, why would He say "thy God"? Well, is it that He knew that Esau would not say "my God"? That's one explanation of this. Esau would not have been willing to say "my God." He was maybe such a rebellious character that he would not say "Elohim is my God." That's a possibility. But also, Jacob knew that he wanted to appeal to Esau, that this is his God. "Your God has sent me out, has found the venison right away, had it ready for me, standing ready for me to shoot it as soon as I left here, and I found it and brought it back right away." Now, what is that? What is all of this? All of this is the blaspheming of the name of God. And yet the blaspheming of the name of God is a very common thing, much used in the way of religion. I see him here as a very pious fundamentalist fraud. He's using the name of God in order to bring about a certain end. So preachers will use the name of God, tell stories in the name of God as if God has done a certain thing and He hasn't done it at all. I just have wondered as I got up this morning of all the shenanigans that is going on in the name of God. It's called Easter. In the name of God, so much across is being done. I listened yesterday on the radio to someone that they said it's one of the fastest growing churches in America, this Faith Promise Church that is up the road from us, not far from us. So while we're small and actually going down in numbers, they're going up, up, up. But it is a place of big performance. I've seen a little bit of what is done there. Enormous performances are there. They like to speak of themselves as the Come As You Are Church, so that there's no reason to dress up, no reason to be anything other than just what you are. So if you want to come in shorts and flip-flops, that's just fine. But behind all of it all, behind all of it, is the free will religion that is there. I don't mean to speak of a neighbor, but what they are and what we are is just truth and a starkness to it. I see it as fraudulent. I see it as the use of the name of God, whereas that's what is taking place here. So he says, "Because the Lord thy God brought it to me." A total lie, a total untruth that is here. He's using God as a prop for his fleshly acts of blasphemy. Then look at verse 21. "And Isaac said unto Jacob, Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." So we know that Isaac is questioning, right? And so Jacob went near to Isaac, his father. And so Isaac reaches up his old hands and he begins to feel of him, and he puts his hands on his hands. And sure enough, he felt like a goat. So he said, "That's my son." And he put his hand up behind his neck, no doubt. Felt like a goat. He said, "All right, that must be him." But he said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, and his brother Esau's hands, and so he blessed him. Now, we're not told this, but I have a feeling that the smell of that savory meat had something to do with it. He's beginning to think about that savory meat that is there, and so he's willing to not proceed and check this out too far. That's the way of natural religion. That's the way of works religion. That's the way we don't want to complicate this. We don't want any kind of complications. The removal of all doctrine that would bring about a disagreement. And he said, "Art thou my very son Esau?" He said, "I am." "So bring it near to me, my son, and I'll eat my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee." And he brought it near to him, and he did eat. And he brought him wine, and he did drink. Once he had his belly full, and he's had enough wine, his father Isaac said unto him, "Come near now, and kiss me, my son." And he came near, and he kissed him. Does that remind you of anything? Remind you of old Judas Iscariot going and kissing Jesus? And he went near, and he kissed him. And he came near, and he kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, and he blessed him, and he said, "See, the smell of my son is the smell of the field which the Lord hath blessed." So he's willingly ignorant, like natural religion. Clearly, he knows something is wrong. But Rebekah is smart. She had done well. And his appetite overcame his apprehensions. He was willingly ignorant. Just like those who sit in the houses of free will religion. And they know something is desperately wrong. But they don't know what it is. And so they just stay. They continue. Then we come to this, our last two verses, 28 and 29. We come to the blessing. "Therefore..." This is what is said. "Therefore God give thee of the dew of the heaven and the fatness of the earth and the plenty of corn and wine. And let the people serve thee and the nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and bless him that blesses thee." So there it is. There's the blessing. That's what Jacob's been seeking. That's what Rebekah's been after. And so now it's passed from Esau and it's passed to Jacob. And of course it already belonged to Jacob. We know that because God had said how it would be done, or that it would be done. But here it is done in a most evil way. So what we see again is that God is sovereign, but man is accountable. There's no excusing Rebekah. There is no excusing Jacob for this complicit and malicious behavior on the part of both of them. Isaac still was sinful in not caring for his family and the covenant blessing as he should. Each were unsound and unscriptural in their dirty dealings, and there it is before us. If you want to buy something that you can't afford, do it, but don't say God led you to do it. If you want to marry someone that is not a believer, do it if you will, but don't say God led you to do it. If you want to depart from the truth and go to a place where free will religion is preeminent, do so if you please, but don't say God led you to do it. That's what's going on here. That's what is happening here. What we're called to do when I read a passage like this is to look to Christ. Look away from the lies and the frauds and deception. The greatest lie and fraud and deception of our day is that God's love is universal. Christ's redemption is general. Man's will is free. And salvation is an offer. That's the heart and the soul of the deceptive religion of our day. Let us look to the sovereign Christ, who is our only hope. Christ for us. Christ in us. Christ earned righteousness imputed to us.